Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pedro Donaldson. Pedro, how you doing?
I love my new name, Chris. I love a rebranding of a Wednesday. How the devil are you?
It's not been a good week, Pete. You might have seen the news that Japan had the tornado, the typhoon and the earthquake all in one day.
Yeah, Chris, it's not been ideal, has it? I mean, in the middle of a tornado and a typhoon, it's inexplicable that an earthquake would decide to turn up at that time. It didn't look very clever at all. Knowing the kind of coastal region of that part of Japan, because obviously, like, you see pictures of like places you've never been and stuff, but I mean, I've been to some of those places that were like underwater and stuff. It's not that it's any less or more tragic, but it's just like Jesus. You can kind of get a bit more of a scope or a bit more of a scale of how awful it was. I must say, is it Dogen? Dogen on Twitter.
Dogen.
He was doing some fantastic. He was doing some fantastic work on Twitter for English language. People, like English language people or English speaking people, to try and get help in like Japanese and stuff. He was writing out signs and stuff so people can kind of please let me in your house. Please, can I gain access to this shelter and stuff? He's deleted them all now, but it has to be said he did some wonderful work on it.
He did. I mean, one of the things the typhoon, the disaster exposed was just how unprepared Japanese authorities are for handling foreigners when such a disaster hits. For example, they tried to, rather than just translate the news, I can't remember which news outlet it was. It might have been the actual Japanese government outlet. They were releasing these disaster notices every few minutes, giving updates, and they were in Japanese. And then they made them easier. They wrote them in easy Japanese for foreigners who didn't really know Japanese, which meant instead of having kanji characters, they were all written in hiragana, which meant that you actually... Not only is it more difficult to read, I find, without kanji characters, but if you put it
more
into Google Translate, if you put it into auto-translate, it doesn't really work. So it kind of backfired and pissed a lot of people off.
At least the kanji's a bit more efficient when it comes to words. Like, most of the kanji have fewer interpretations. They know where words start and end. Yeah. Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah, but, I mean, with these with typhoons, usually I take them with a pinch of salt. Usually they kind of... In the days leading up to it, the authorities go crazy about them, but it's often very anticlimactic. It arrives, and it's not too bad. This one, I did take notice as my phone was going crazy the whole week. I got alarms and things on my phone.
Constant alerts, yeah.
And just by satellite images of it, if you looked at how big it was about, I think it was 1,000 kilometres in diameter. It was an absolute monster storm. Yeah. It didn't really affect me personally, and luckily all the Abroad Japan team, which is just me, Natsuki and Ryotaro, were all right. We weren't really affected. It was quite sad. One of the videos we made a few years ago, I don't know if you remember, I did this kind of challenge with Ryotaro and these two idol girls from some idol group. where they dressed up as, we all dressed up as samurai and played some sort of card game. It was a really obscure video, a little bit embarrassing. But the town we filmed it in, Marumori, which is just south of Sendai, that got completely flooded. And for me, that seeing the town that I'd visited and filmed in completely underwater was quite a shocking thing to see. You know, you don't really appreciate how bad a flood is until you've actually, it's somewhere you can relate to or somewhere you've been yourself.
Yeah.
So that put it into perspective for me. Currently, 40 people dead, 16 missing, tens of thousands of people without power, and there's about 110,000 people taking part in search and rescue operations across the country. The worst affected area, I think, was Nagano and Shizuoka. Basically, the worst affected regions where the rivers actually just burst out and flooded the area. So it was the floods that caused the most damage. Although, as I said a minute ago, it was a triple whammy of natural disasters. It started with like a tornado. Saturday morning, a tornado swept through Chiba, overturned a car and killed a guy there. And then the typhoon struck. And then at 5 p.m., just before the typhoon was making landfall, an earthquake, a magnitude 5.8 earthquake went off in Tokyo Bay as well. So I think people in Tokyo had a really rough day. And bits of Sendai were flooded as well. But things are pretty much back to normal now for most of the country. Japan always recovers from these things very fast. They've got a lot of great infrastructure for this sort of thing. So yeah, but it was a bad one. It was one of the first ones that that actually scared me a little bit. Like I didn't sleep the whole night. It sounded like the windows were going to implode on my apartment all night long. And even Ryotaro, the great all-powerful Ryotaro, seemed a little bit nervous about it. When I spoke to him on the phone, he was like, oh, it's going to be quite bad. And, you know, if Ryotaro's scared, you know it's going to be bad.
Everyone should be scared. Did you see the helicopter footage or pictures of the Shinkansen trains, the bullet trains?
Yeah.
Underwater, it looked like birds sort of drinking. It's really weird because they've got big long noses.
I don't know how you managed to come to that conclusion. like birds drinking.
It's what it looked like.
$300 million worth of Shinkansen ruined because they were left docked in a station at quite a low point, and I think the river flooded them. I don't know if they can repair them or not, but yes, they went down as well. So. Not a great week, all in all.
No, pretty awful. Well, I hope everyone gets back on their feet soon.
Yeah, I think it'll be all right. But for me personally, the most annoying part of the week was I finally released that Fukushima documentary I talked about doing for months, right? I know we've been talking about it. I went there, made the documentary, and it's a 20-minute documentary. Have you seen it?
I have seen it, yes.
Oh, what do you think?
Ooh. I really enjoyed my favourite part, like I said on the text, was the bit where one side of a road, everyone's allowed to go back into their houses, but because of the radiation and the fact that it's not been irradiated. Is it irradiated? Either way.
Radioactive.
Irradiated, is that flammable, inflammable situation with English language? It's just very confusing. Either way, one side of the road, you're allowed to live in your house, but the other side of the road, you're very much not allowed to live in your house because it's riddled with radiation. And a surprising amount of, like, looting and bears smashing through people's houses and stuff. It's I do find... My favourite thing about travelling is finding these places that have been kind of overtaken by nature or reclaimed by
abandoned.
Nature. Man-made constructions that have been abandoned and nature just starts kind of coming back in. There's something very evocative. You know, there's a reason why pretty much every video game in the world is set. Has a level where it's in Chernobyl or something with the famous merry-go-round. Ferris wheel and stuff
Call
like that.
It's
just so kind of like weird and eerie and otherworldly. But you know, stuff like The Last of Us. So like seeing some of that stuff, you're like, oh my god, it looks incredible. But obviously, it's a scene of very depressing situations, and also just people, communities trying to get back on their feet when everyone's moved away. You know, five kids going to one school that used to hold, you know, thousands is just insane.
It's a difficult thing to tackle. You know, when I turned up to do the documentary, I wasn't sure really what to focus on. I could have focused on the nuclear reactor and the plant, but I think that's been done a lot by news outlets already. I kind of wanted to focus on the human aspects of it, right? The people that are affected by it. We only interviewed three people. I'd like to have done more, but there's only so much you can pack into a 20-minute documentary, and on YouTube, you know, you always get a little bit uncomfortable doing anything over 15 minutes because you think, oh, is anyone going to watch this?
Right.
But walking through the towns in Tomioka, walking through the town like Tomioka where the pharmacy was abandoned and all this whole town is just empty, it's really quite an eerie sight. That's why I put the opening shot of the documentary is this pharmacy that's just boarded off, just down the road from all the buildings where wild boar have smashed their way through and stolen everything. Pretty surreal. We actually saw a wild boar. We saw a couple of wild boars running around, but I was too busy flying the drone. Actually, while I was flying the drone over the cow farm, there's a crazy cow farm we went to, and while I was doing it, there was a wild boar trying to creep up on me. And I had to fend off this wild boar while trying to fly a drone over 200 cows. It was quite a surreal situation to be in.
Nice.
I'm glad I did it. I was on the fence about doing a Fukushima documentary for the longest time. And I kind of thought that a lot of people would not like it. I don't know why. I had this feeling that a lot of people would be angry. Because it's with Fukushima, it's very divisive, right? A lot of people are pro-nuclear, a lot of people anti-nuclear. And if you look in the comments section, a lot of people are like, well, this proves that the Fukushima disaster wasn't that bad and they should have not evacuated so many people. And as I said in the documentary, 2,200 people lost their lives as a result of the evacuation, right? Leaving the area, leaving their homes behind, being ripped away from their lives. It led to a lot of deaths. At the same time, from an anti-nuclear perspective as well, the documentary is pretty powerful, I think, in the sense that it just shows you the scale of how much area was ruined. And there's that sort of haunting shot of all the bags of contaminated soil piled up over a massive area the size of 20 football fields.
Managed to get, like, it's such, I know they've put like billions and billions of pounds into the recovery effort, but I mean, just having to physically, by hand, you know, scoop up the first foot of topsoil and get them into bags and then, you know, stack them up in an abandoned rice field. You're just like, what a fart on. I know it's like important work, but like, what? Surely there's more of an efficient way of doing this, but clearly there isn't. You just got to, you know, it's almost quite old school, the way you just got to scoop the irradiated soil up and get them in bags and, you know, probably put them somewhere under a bit of concrete. It's a weird situation for them to be in. I hear that the algorithms may have cost you a few views as well, which is the annoying thing on YouTube.
Yeah, it was quite. I mean, I didn't know how the Fukushima thing was going to do, the documentary was going to do on YouTube, but it got the best critical response I think I've ever seen on a Abroad in Japan video. People tweeting me, Facebooking me, sending me emails saying how they enjoyed it. It got 30,000 likes. It all did really well. But what annoyed me was YouTube didn't promote it. It didn't actually promote it anywhere on the platform. So it was the worst performing video of the year. And at first I just thought, oh, it's Fukushima. Maybe people aren't interested in it. Maybe I kind of overestimated how many people are going to be interested in it. And also it's 20 minutes long, so maybe that put a lot of people off as well. But then a lot of regular viewers who watch every video came to me and said, oh, I haven't seen it anywhere on the platform. I didn't get notified about it. And a friend of mine thinks it's because I had the word, there was a word destroyed, I think, I put in the tags. And they think that words like destroyed and nuclear might be blacklisted on YouTube or actually lead to videos not getting promoted. And it does seem that the video wasn't promoted properly by YouTube. Like compared to the other four or five videos, which all have got like 1 million, 800,000, 600,000, this one did really quite badly. So that was kind of rubbish and made me feel depressed.
I think anything like that that's got any kind of, I don't know, possibly political, possibly environmental kind of, you know, Fukushima, I think Fukushima is a word, would probably be blacklisted as well. But the net result is that, you know, YouTube doesn't promote serious work and only promotes, you know, people fucking eating Tide Pods and shit. You know, the format, the platform will become dumber over time because they can't sell adverts on Fukushima. They can't sell ads on, I mean, I guess people who want to advertise on a documentary about a nuclear, what is ostensibly a fairly wide-ranging disaster, there'll be fewer advertisers who want to advertise on your video in this case. So therefore, why would YouTube bother to advertise it to get more views? Because, you know, they can't make any money out of it, etc. So it's probably something to do with that as well.
I think that's the main reason. Although, funnily enough, in the comments, somebody in the US said that they'd seen an advert for nuclear power come up on the video, which is a little bit crazy.
Brilliant.
But yeah, no, that's the main reason. Obviously, YouTube wants to get its money, so they're going to prioritise videos that they can put adverts on. And that's, so yeah, that is depressing. The fact that if I'd made a video of me eating some silly fucking flavoured Kit Kats, would probably get hundreds of thousands of views more than something
video.
I've... Yeah. Close. Actually, I'm doing mascots. I'm finally doing the mascot idea.
Yay!
That we talked about doing.
Love a
finally
mascot.
Finally focusing on mascots. and I suspect that'll do better. But no, it's a shame. Something you put so much energy into, something that you think is your best work, and then you get screwed over by the very platform you've kind of helped to contribute to over the years. It feels a little bit like a betrayal. And it kind of shook my faith in YouTube a little bit and made me think about what I should do going forward, you know, and where I should put my work and all sorts of things. So
big money move to who's the Microsoft streaming site? I forget its name now. Everyone they bought up Ninja from Twitch, didn't they?
That's right, yeah.
Whatever that's
called. I'll do
that. Yeah, you should do that to the have a big money move to Vimeo.
A big money move to Vimeo. Not sold on that. But there you go. If you're listening to this. So, ladies and gentlemen, and you haven't seen the Fukushima documentary, go and check it out. It's called Inside Fukushima, What Happened After the Disaster. And, it's one of the better things I've made, I think.
It's very good. As most
our video
big
together
stars.
In Kyoto.
Exactly, that's your second favourite one. I mean, I guess like people like Brad Pitt and stuff, they do slightly more indie-leaning films just so they can make the big... they make blockbusters just so they can make the films they're actually interested in, so...
Suppose, yeah. I'll be making a Kit Kat video so I can fund more Fukushima documentaries.
Just eat some shitty candy you found in fucking Harajuku or something.
Perfect. There's a news story that's been dominating the headlines this week, not just in Japan, but around the world, but it resonates and starts in Japan. And it comes down to a really creepy situation that sounds quite Black Mirror-esque. And I hate referring to things as being like Black Mirror, but Black Mirror is so good at taking technological situations and making them eerie that it works. And this situation involves a stalker. A 26-year-old Japanese guy was arrested after sexually assaulting a pop idol. I don't think they've revealed who the pop idol is. I know she's 21.
Yeah.
Japanese pop idol. Has a big social media presence and following online. But he was able to track her down using her Instagram photos. And she'd been quite careful with her photos and where she was taking them. But the photos were so high resolution, he was able to zoom in on her eye, literally, and see the reflection in her eyes and see where she was and which station she was standing at and where her apartment was. And he was able to look at the photos of her apartment, work out the direction of the sunlight coming in from outside and calculate which building it was in the neighbourhood using the windows and the curtains. Absolutely terrifying. It's a kind of a combination of a stalker who's taking things to the extreme. And also it just shows you how the downside of having such high resolution photos in this day and age.
Yeah. I mean, we could sort of go down the line of this man is an ingenious rapist, but I mean, the bottom line is it's a fucking horrific story, but it just shows that you've got to be so careful as a woman who posts stuff online. I mean, I constantly post pictures of my intercom. At the front of my house, I've got an intercom system, and I live in the centre of town. Very easy, the middle of the tourist block, middle of the tourist London. And every now and again, someone will put a bottle of, like, I don't know, Jamaican green ginger wine or something on the thing, or they'll put a packet of Rizzlers. And I always take a picture, and I always post it up saying "shit on Pete's intercom," and you can clearly see the shop that's over the road, and it's not like a Pret-a-Manger or a WH Smith's, shops that are on every corner, on every street, in every district of London. It's, you know, a very familiar indie boo shop. So it's very easy to figure out where my front door is.
Why are you telling us this on the podcast?
It's very easy.
To ladies and gentlemen listening, it's a challenge now.
No,
I
because
know where
people
you live.
Have no.
And
well,
I know where you live.
People have done it before. People have done it before. They've figured out where I live, and they've put shit on my intercom for me to find.
That's mental.
Like a little shrine. It's mad. So imagine being a woman on the internet. Anyway, it's a fucking shit show. It's horrible. I don't know why anyone would do it. But imagine being. Imagine being an idol or someone famous.
I know quite a few vloggers in Japan that are girls that have had similar problems, albeit not on this scale. Yeah. But yeah, no, it sets a worrying precedent. I know there's a lot of stalking issues in Japan. A good friend of mine had a stalker for 10 years and they couldn't, I don't think they could do anything about it because the guy hadn't actually assaulted her. And they,
I imagine the laws over there are about as...
They're not good.
We've talked about how women have to move through the world differently in Japan, it's a male dominant society and the subjugation.
Well, you can't be prosecuted here unless you've been assaulted. I think so. Even if someone's stalking you, if they don't do anything, the police can't do anything about it. So it's
a bit of
a tricky situation. But there's been all sorts of issues with pop idol stars in Japan. Remember a few years ago the girl who had. I think someone like tried to saw her arm off or something. We reported about it, didn't we? About a year or
during
two ago.
And I remember talking to my mate about it. And she said, well, my mate who lives in Osaka, she's last from Kyoto originally. Yeah. She sort of said, I used to DJ with her in London. She said, people say that she was just, you know, trying to get a bit of attention and stuff. I was like, someone sawed her fucking hand off, mate. Like, that's not the case. But that's how these cases are reported on. Oh, yeah, she was asking for it. She wanted it to happen just so she could become famous. Because it's like, no. No one saws their fucking hands off to get a couple more quid, for crying out loud. Jesus Christ.
Well, the worst ones, I think it was either this year or last year, I can't remember now, but there was the pop idol. Some guy had sent this idol girl various presents, and I think he sent her a nice necklace or a bit of jewellery, and she sent it back to him. And so at one of her concerts, he turned up and stabbed her, giving her life-changing, horrific injuries. A lot of people didn't defend him, but they sort of said, oh, she shouldn't have sent it back to him, as if that excused him assaulting her. It's a lot of worrying things like that. It's one of my least favourite things about Japan, the way they handle situations like that. I'll go on record and say that's probably the worst thing about Japan, the way they handle such cases, the fact that it was her fault. But that is the dark side of Japan, I suspect, that kind of aspect
massively.
There you go. How do we follow up that with a happier topic? How can do we go to the inbox?
I think that's probably for the best. It's time for the inbox, people. It's time for the fax machine.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
What have we got, Mr. Donaldson?
Hang fire. I'll just pick up my phone. I moved my phone over, away from me, see, Chris, so I couldn't... Let me just...
Tell you what, I'll read it.
No,
we
sorry,
can't.
I got it, baby. Hi, Chris and Pete. My name is Javier, and I'm from Paraguay. Ooh, I started listening to the podcast last week while getting ready for work, and after watching the fantastic mini documentary about Fukushima, I wanted to share an amusing encounter I had whilst visiting Tokyo in January of 2018. I was minding my own business, eating this giant rainbow-coloured cotton candy in Harajuku. What an image. Very enjoyable. When some college students approached me with a video camera and asked in English to interview me for a project they were working on. It started with basic questions like where I was from and why I was in Japan. Then it moved on to more interesting ones like what do you think of bullying? And then they asked me if I felt personally responsible for the Fukushima nuclear disaster. It really caught me off guard, to say the least, so I just said something like, well, I hope I'm not responsible, and that was it. No more questions, any explanation whatsoever. To this day, it eats me that there is a video of me somewhere answering these questions that I'll probably never see. I just want to know what were the purpose of the interviews, of the questions, so I can make sense of the interview, but I suppose I'll never know. Do you think there's a feeling among the Japanese, Javier asks, that there's people other than the government to blame for the nuclear accident? Do they feel guilty or something? I really need an explanation as to why they asked me that question, although I'm clearly not Japanese, says Javier.
It wasn't a magnitude 9.3 earthquake. It was Javier. He's responsible for the Fukushima nuclear disaster.
Yeah.
It's interesting, actually, just this week, the top people at TEPCO, the nuclear company that owns Daiichi, they got off any wrongdoing, which caused a bit of a stir, because a lot of people don't agree with that.
Right.
It's difficult to know, really. I'm not an expert on what happened or the intricacies of the nuclear disaster. I do know, and this should be reassuring for Javier. We're defending Javier now. and his reckless actions. That the earthquake triggered the tsunami. The tsunami hit the reactor. The reactor had a seawall, like a flood wall, to stop any potential tsunamis, but they didn't have one that could take the one on the scale that they had that day. No one predicted they'd get a tsunami on that scale. It was completely extraordinarily crazy. But they say that if they'd spent an extra $50 million on the seawall, it might have saved it. But the tsunami cut the power off to the power plant, and the backup generators that were supposed to kick in to cool the reactor, they got flooded, I think because they were underground. Probably not, probably not the best place to put them. and that was how the nuclear reactor exploded, overheated and blew up. So I'd like to think Javier wasn't responsible. I'd like to think Javier can walk away from this, not feeling a sense of responsibility for the second worst nuclear disaster in history. I don't know why they asked Javier that, though.
Random. It seems very strange.
Imagine that. Maybe coming all the way from Paraguay for a holiday, and someone's like, you did it. You created this nuclear disaster.
Maybe there was some Paraguayan money involved in the Daiichi, or what they're called.
Conspiracy.
It just seems like, I mean, theory. I guess the way the nuclear disaster was treated, you look at how, obviously, you watch the Chernobyl and stuff like that, and how the pride and the single-mindedness of the USSR government, which obviously fell pretty soon afterwards simply because of this disaster, like how they fucked it because they were just too obsessed with you know, pretending that everything was fine. And
their
the
image,
Japanese, obviously, treated it in a very different way, and they obviously it was action stations, and they were very very honest about what happened, and did it in the correct way, because it was
worse. Two main differences between Chernobyl and Fukushima. The first is that Fukushima released, I think, a tenth of the radiation that Chernobyl did. When the explosion happened and all the radioactive elements went airborne, just by virtue that the fact that it was a different type of reactor, and the casing around the reactor itself was still mostly intact in Fukushima. And the second one is the Japanese... And the second is the Japanese government made a conscious effort, unlike the USSR, to clean up the area that was affected, which they are doing now, as we mentioned earlier. $27 billion being spent on that. 50,000 people working around the clock to fix it over the last 8 years. So a little bit different. But again, the main takeaway point here is Javier from Paraguay, you did not create the disaster. Don't feel any guilt.
Your conscience is clear.
Your conscience is clear. But no, Japanese, going back to how Japanese people feel about it, I very rarely meet a Japanese person who now feels optimistic or advocates nuclear power. They don't really like nuclear power now. That's as a form of energy, that popularity has gone down the pan as a result of Fukushima. But I think most people, a lot of people are angry at TEPCO, but a lot of other people just feel that it was just a crazy disaster that they couldn't have ever foreseen. So it's a difficult situation. Depends on how you feel about nuclear power, I guess, how you'll inevitably decide what the outcome is. But yeah,
I think any island that is beset by such ridiculous earthquakes and seismic activity, and also you know, all the tornadoes and stuff, probably not an ideal place to put your nuclear reactors. But you know, I guess they got to go somewhere. Can't stick them on the mainland.
Come to Japan.
What's the mainland? China.
Come to Japan and give a talk before the government on that. But it's a good point, yeah. In such a country that is bombarded by so many natural disasters, it does seem a bit risky to put a nuclear reactor, dozens of nuclear reactors along the coastline, as is the case. But that is a story for another day. Keep the stories and questions coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com, guys. We'll be back same time next week. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great week, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
Yes, bye-bye.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.